Brian turned slowly to stare down the barrels of a Winchester Model 24 20 gauge. He gaped at the figure holding the shotgun. In a wrecked vacation cottage somewhere up near what remained of the Great Lakes, Ryan had once found a stash of children's books. Included was a beautifully illustrated copy of The Adventures of Robin Hood, who had been an English outlaw in the Middle Ages, who'd allegedly robbed the rich and given the proceeds to the poor. It was a way of life that had been a source of endless amusement to the crew of War Wag 1. Robin had some friends, one or two of which had stuck in Ryan's memory, a giant called Little John and a fat priest who had been named Friar Tuck. Ryan now felt like he was staring at the fictional cleric made flesh. The man wore a long brown gown, like a woman's dress, that fell to sandaled feet, tied at the waist with a length of knotted cord. A whip, twin to the one on the altar, was stuffed into his makeshift belt. Ryan's initial guess put him at close to 6 feet, but he was so fat it was hard to judge. Really big men often looked shorter than they were. He looked around 300 pounds, but it was easy to see that a lot of that was hard muscle. His face was round, with several wobbling chins, clean shaven. The top of his head had also been shaved in a kind of circle, exactly like the picture of the legendary Friar Tuck. The eyes were difficult to judge in the gloom of the church, but they were so dark they could have passed for black, almost buried behind layers of fat, looking like little currants that had been thrown hard into a vat of white dough. And he was smiling.
Welcome, dear pilgrims. Such a pleasant surprise to find a pair of worshippers waiting for my services so early on such a fine morning.
Not exactly worshippers, Father.
What a deeply ecumenical comment, my dear child. For surely all of us are not exactly worshippers. How aptly spoken.
Ryan allowed his right hand to drop casually toward the butt of the holstered Sig Sauer, on the blind side to the monk. But the man spotted the movement and gestured toward Ryan with the barrels of the Winchester.
No. We have only just met, and you are trying to force me to speed you to your own personal Gehenna. Pray, make no hasty moves.
Gehenna? Is that near Savannah? That's where we were bound when we spotted your church and we were just so taken with it.
Filthy whoring harlot! An untruth in the mouth of a strumpet is like unto worms in the brain of a camel.
Ryan could see that the man was crazier than a shithouse rat, but dangerous. The man's chubby finger was tight on the triggers of the scattergun, the mean little eyes not flickering from Ryan and Christy.
You live here?
I have a small home close by, but I am remiss. I am called Father Sander by my poor flock.
There's a bill nearby?
Oh, indeed, yes. Praise the gods.
Ryan was vaguely bothered by the strange smell that lurked underneath the reek of incense, a smell that also clung to the body and clothes of the fat monk.
You don't need the blaster, Father.
Christy took a casual step across to her left, trying to cover Ryan from the man's vision. But Father Sander was alert, gesturing with the shotgun for her to move back again.
Stupidity'll get you very dead, my child, before your time. And who knows when the hour cometh. Be prepared, foolish harlot.
Ryan gestured toward the windows.
Interesting stained glass. Unusual.
Enough talk.
You aiming to keep us here? Won't your flock get suspicious?
My dear one-eyed dead man, my flock, as you call them, shit themselves if I even glance in their direction. They know that this is not as other churches, and this is what the dirt-poor, triple-dumb bastards secretly need. Not to be loved, to be cursed and whipped and tortured and sometimes chilled. That is a form of religion that makes sense in their brutish lives.
Ryan thought about the whip lying on the altar with its blood-clogged barbs. He'd known plenty of cold-heart killers in his lifetime in Deathlands, and Father Sander was right up there with the best of them. Or perhaps the worst of them.
We'll go down into the crypt. Pilgrims on the highway to celestial suffering.
The friar gestured with a scattergun, pointing them toward the front of the church by the altar.
Behind the pulpit, outlanders.
As they moved slowly forward, Ryan noticed that the figure of the crucified Christ that hung at the farther end of the church was sheathed in coils of razored barbed wire. Father Sander stayed a safe 6 paces behind them, not giving them a ghost of a chance to jump him.
Ring in the floor. Lifts easily with the aid of the gods and a good counterbalance. Find a lamp and some self-lights just inside it, and some steps down. Get the lamp going and walk down the steps. Go straight to the far wall and wait there for me. Don't move or speak.
Ryan stooped and tugged on a wrought iron ring set in the stone floor close by the altar.
Gaia!
A noxious miasma floated up from the black hole. Ryan knew instantly what the smell had been that he'd first noticed in the church, clinging to the person of Gross Father Sander. It was death. Spilled blood, fresh and old. The vault below the aisle was nothing more or less than a charnel house. Ryan hesitated at entering the pit.
Now or later, matters not to me, Outlander. But most of my parish find breath oddly attractive and cling to it, longer than one would have thought possible.
I'm going.
Ryan lit the oil lamp and adjusted the wick to give a steady golden light that showed him a narrow flight of steps that wound down into a deep cellar.
I think the time has come for thee to lay aside the weapons of unrighteousness, brother and sister. The two blasters can go down on the floor, at the top of the stairs. Perhaps that crooked stick as well.
Can't walk without it. Got a bullet in my leg. Can't even stand.
There was a long, menacing stillness, and Ryan knew that the monk was considering the option of blasting him in the spine. But the first option, of having them both untouched in his crypt, finally won out.
Very well. But thy automatic in thy double-action Smith & Wesson, daughter of ungodliness. Very slow and very careful. Lay them down, pilgrim. Now you may creep into my crypt.
The cellar was unbearably hot, with two coal fires burning in iron braziers, one at each end, casting a fiery crimson glow across the space that heightened the images of hell. Rows of torture instruments were hung on strong metal hooks, probes, files, hammers and pokers, whips in all shapes and sizes, knives, razors and cleavers, a rack and thumb screws, chains and loops of thin wire, manacles and iron collars with padlocks. It was a fully equipped torture chamber, like an engraving from an ancient tome about the horrors of the Spanish Inquisition. And it was occupied. Ryan and Christy immediately saw the body, hung from one of the hooks like a rejected side of meat, so mangled that it was impossible to tell its sex or its age. The corpse had been torn and battered in a hideous manner, but screamed of endless hours of unimaginable pain and suffering.
Ah, that! A local youth who helped me with a service for good crops for the ville. A successful operation, but the patient sadly died.
He gestured for Ryan and Christy to stand against the far wall of the cellar, while he laid several probes and pokers in the braziers to grow hot.
Suffering is pleasure, and pleasure is suffering.
The fat monk kept the Winchester scattergun aimed at his two prisoners. It was obvious to Ryan that the priest intended to chain them, then torture them both to death. It meant that the moment was coming like a runaway train, when some sort of move would have to be made, whatever the outcome. Ryan knew that Christy would be thinking exactly the same thing, but there was no way of communicating with each other, no plan to be hatched. At the back of his mind was the desperate idea of making a suicidal attack and hoping that Sander fired both of the barrels, giving Christy a good chance of making a break for safety, then bringing JB, Jack, and the others back with her to avenge his death. If the monk had been holding a handgun, there would have been a good chance that he might miss. Ryan remembered seeing a nervous bounty hunter in a clothing store in a nameless ville in Pennsylvania fire 8 shots from a Ruger P-85 at a dodging killer. All of the shots were at a range of less than 10 feet, and every single bullet missed the target. That wasn't going to happen at that range with a 20-gauge scattergun.
Now thou canst strip thy bubonic bodies naked and then chain thyself to the walls, and we shall commence the service.
The instruments of torture in the hot coals were already beginning to glow cherry red.
The scum of my parish will be so happy when they hear that I have consecrated a pair of strangers in the church. They will be happy because they will know that they will be spared for a short while. But it will be a very short while.
Ryan hadn't moved, leaning on his clumsy walking stick, clinging to each passing second. Mildred and JB hadn't been all that far away from the little church, and there was always a remote chance that they might come along and save the day. It was a small hope.
Close off.
please.
The time for begging will come later, when the blood flows and salt fills your eyes and mouth, and your flesh is scorched, and you crave butter for the smarting. But there is no butter here in hell.
Just let her go and keep me.
I have two pets for my collection. Why, Outlander filth, should I give either of you up?
The shotgun barrels were about 8 feet away from the two prisoners. Christy took a step toward the priest, her hand spread imploringly.
Please?
Instinctively, Sander took a similar step back from her, gesturing with the big shotgun for her to stay where she was. But his movement made him bump into the dangling corpse. The monk turned to glance at the bobbing body, and the Winchester scattergun swung away with him. The monk was knocked off balance. Sander kicked out, but Ryan had a good grip on the man's right leg, just above the ankle. He levered up with all of his strength, trying to ignore the stabbing pain from his wounded thigh. He hefted the huge figure backward, keeping himself tucked under the man's belly so that the monk couldn't reach him with the scattergun, but the friar still tried.
Fuck you!
Ryan ignored the blow to his shoulder, still crouching at the man's feet. Christy launched herself feet first at Sander. The large man just swayed backwards, giving Ryan the chance to try a second heave on his leg.
Get the blaster!
Ryan crawled over the downed body.
Fire blast!
Sander clubbed Ryan's head with his forearm. Christy grabbed desperately at the barrels of the Winchester, keeping them steered away from Ryan as Sander fought to fire the second 20-gauge round at his attackers. The priest was now on his back, close to the larger of the braziers, one chubby hand gripping the stock of the Winchester, the other scrabbling down at Ryan, trying to beat him away. The man was extraordinarily powerful, and Ryan couldn't get a good stranglehold on him, nor could he pry loose the shotgun.
Oh, bastard shitters!
I love you too.
Ryan finally managed to snatch the monk's left hand. He twisted and snapped the thumb out of its socket. Sander's robe had ridden up over his knees, and he kicked out at Christy, making contact with her ribs. She flew sideways, still holding desperately to the man's forearm, her weight pulled on the shotgun. Christy was thrown to one side. Ryan batted aside the flailing shotgun. Then he brought around his elbow.
You're fucking dead.
Ryan straddled the monk. Ryan's sole desire was to end it, and end it quickly. Ryan glanced quickly around, seeing that Christy was struggling to sit up, rubbing the side of her head. He was aware of the scorching heat from the iron brazier at his side, the wooden handles of the torture instruments, mostly wrapped in steaming wet rags. Ryan grabbed at the nearest, seeing that it was a straight iron poker with a twisted end, like a corkscrew. The tip glowed almost white hot. The handle, despite the protective rags, was almost too hot to hold. Sander blinked open his puffy eyes, shaking his shaven head as if he couldn't recognize what was happening, or couldn't believe it.
Say ah!
Ryan carefully placed the almost molten iron tip over Sander's mouth. The stench of blistering flesh flooded Ryan's nostrils, almost making him puke. But Ryan was as cold as granite. He pushed the probe down to the back of the monk's mouth, over the burned tongue, into the top of his throat, filling the dying man's lungs with the stink of his own burning flesh. Christy had a dark bruise flowering on the side of her forehead, close to the hairline, and she was still trembling, but other than the residual shock, she seemed to be in pretty good shape. Ryan got off the dead man and retrieved his walking stick. Ryan felt like he'd been run over by a mule, but at least they were both still alive and relatively unharmed. Christy found a large barrel of lamp oil among the shadows of the cellar.
Be good to clean out this nest once and for all. Cremate that vile piece of human shit at the same time.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Ready?
Yeah.
Christy stood next to Ryan on the stairs and pushed over the barrel.
Heat from the braziers won't ignite it, will it?
No. It's not like gasoline. We'll find some stuff to help the flames upstairs.
In the sanctuary of the picturesque church, they each picked up and reholstered their weapons. Ryan took the blasphemous Bible from the lectern. He twisted the torn pages into a makeshift torch, then tossed the big Bible down the stairs into the cellar.
Ready? Christy handed him a match.
Sure. Let's do it and get out of here.
Ryan tossed the burning bundle down the steps. They moved toward the door as black smoke leaked out. On an impulse, Ryan hobbled to the altar and picked up the bloody whip. Heaved that into the sea of flames that surged up the stairs. Ryan and Christy looked behind them as they walked away. There was a huge pillar of smoke, dark at its base, lighter as it rose into the blue sky, billowing through the shingled roof, which was blazing fiercely. More smoke came through the open door, and tendrils crept from the slitted gaps in the tower.
Won't be working anymore, Evil.
And it was such a pretty building.
I'm sure the Doc would have some neat little saying about there being a worm at the heart of the Red Apple. Or something like that.
Ryan winced and shifted his balance again, aware of the warm stickiness of fresh blood trickling down the back of his wounded thigh.
Hurting?
Some.
Get Mildred to take a good look at it when we get back to the raft.
You bet I will.
They were out in the beautiful gardens, still staring back at the flaming church.
Gaia, it's like a fountain of glass. It's lovely.
Rope must have burned through at the belfry bottom.
Sounds pretty.
Leave the place a mite cleaner than when we arrived here.
Generally do, lover. We generally do.
After the horrors of the morning, the rest of the day drifted by in a haze of sunshine and overeating. The roast pig that Mildred and JB had caught was absolutely delicious. Mildred had also found a tall tree in the old orchard with some ripe pears and another that dripped peaches. It was the middle of the afternoon before everyone had recovered enough from the enormous meal.
Mildred, do you mind looking at my leg once more before we get back on the river?
That'd be a good idea.
Ryan pulled his pants down below his wound, revealing a good amount of fresh blood and deep bruising.
Whew. You can't afford to keep aggravating this, Ryan. There's a serious risk of poisoning it without proper care.
Don't tell me. Tell that crazy son of a bitch priest. If you can find him.
They traveled the next day and a half at a leisurely pace. The Tennessee River moved along at a comfortable speed. They had seen a total of 5 people so far on this second day afloat. There had been a pair of whiskered old men in a tiny rowboat battling their way upriver against the current. They sat side by side, each with an oar, back straining, hardly looking across at the clumsy raft as it rolled past them in the opposite direction. A woman and child had been sitting on a shallow bank on the eastern shore of the Tennessee. The woman was blind, with smooth flesh covering where her eye socket should have been. The child that played by her feet, picking up tiny pebbles and laying them in a maze-like pattern, had a look of blank idiocy on its face, not showing the least interest in the strangers that drifted by a few yards away from them. Christy had called to them, but neither the woman nor the child reacted in any way. The last of the people they saw was a young man with delicate features and a halo of thick golden hair. He had been walking along a path that ran by the river, in the same direction as they were sailing. He had turned out to be playing without a full set of marbles, and had responded to their inquiry about the proximity to Shiloh with an idiotic grin and a wag of his head.